From the turn of the century through to the 1930s until its withdrawal in 1960, AdSteam ran the very popular Gulf trips aboard the Munta, the Minipa and others. The Gulf trip visited Port Lincoln, Whyalla, Port Augusta and Port Pirie. And now South Australia's Gulf St Vincent and Spencer Gulf are being rejuvenated with some new cruising product. In January next year, the MV Funchal, that's a 550-passenger cruise ship owned by Classic International Cruises, is going to begin cruising the region. Expat crow eater Rod Imey's with us tonight. Recently cruised aboard a vastly different vessel, the North Star Cruises True North, taking in McLaren Vale, Kangaroo Island, Port Lincoln, Coffin Bay, Streaky Bay and Ceduna.
Hi, Tony.
Busy agenda.
Thanks for inviting me back.
Mate, good to see you. We often overlook South Australia as a cruising region, but there's lots of interesting options.
Well,
there.
It's funny. I mean, my parents used to talk fondly about the Gulf trips, which are run by the Adelaide Steamship Company, which, of course, evolved into something far more complex and monstrous in the end.
And David Jones at one stage. Well, got a bit confused.
Though, now, let's not talk about what they did to Penfolds Wineries.
Yes.
But, and basically it was the good old Munta and Minipa were little 500-ton ships that used to carry 100 passengers, and the passengers would go off for a shore excursion while they're unloading the cargo and bales of wool and stuff like that.
I'm sure some former passengers are nodding their head just as
they
you
were.
Speak.
It was, I mean, it went on for so long, from basically the turn of the century right through to the 1960s, very, very early 1960s, and it was hugely popular. But I think what killed it in the end was finally that they became various forms of subsidised road transport, like the trains and the trucks and so forth, and that, unfortunately, was a death knell. But having said that, the Minister for Tourism in South Australia, Dr Jane Lomax-Smith, has been very ebullient about the Funchal coming back to South Australia beginning in January next year.
Mm. And there's some boom times going on there at the moment. Whyalla is just absolutely screaming along and is now back as the number two city in South Australia.
Well, anyone who's been to Whyalla will wonder how, but I mean, it's in a godforsaken area out in the Eyre Peninsula, which people who've travelled out there or driven across the Nullarbor through Port Augusta, Port Pirie and places like that, there's not an awful lot to see. And you've got to ask yourself, and I did, having grown up out there as a kid, where's the attraction? You know, I mean,
well, what does it have to offer?
Well, I think probably what they're doing now is you've got obviously a whole lot more active and enthusiastic tourism structure driven by the government and the operators down there. The standards are a lot higher. The facilities are a lot more sophisticated than they ever used to be. Things were pretty rudimentary, 40 and 50 years ago, and it was a bit of an ordeal in some cases. But Kangaroo Island, often overlooked. I mean, I was well and truly grown up before I ever went to Kangaroo Island. It was often laughed off as a bit of a quasi-overseas destination for Adelaide kids. Mm. But having been there and having explored it now stem to stern, I can say Kangaroo Island really does have a lot going for it. Some of the commentators have described it as Australia's Galapagos. I think that might be a bit of a stretch, but there are a great deal of wildlife attractions.
Mm. Some species there that you can't see elsewhere.
Well, the Australian fur seal, for example. Very rare. I mean, they're all over the place in Kangaroo Island, but you won't find them anywhere else, hardly. The recent bushfires didn't do them a lot of good, but they've certainly had plenty of koalas and some very rare forms of wallaby and kangaroo. And the rock formations, heavens above, the remarkables, which we see in all the calendars, that wonderful calendar shot that you see on the Steve Parish calendars all the time, and beautiful lighthouses down there right on the end. So in terms of hiking and camping and just hanging out, Kangaroo Island does have an awful lot to go for it. And it's it is isolated from pests and feral animals, so the some of the primary industries there enjoy a pretty relaxed time, not having to fight against rabbits and foxes and things like that. So Kangaroo Island, of course, just across the way back to the Fluorio Peninsula, and down a little bit further you've got McLaren Vale, which I'm sure you've been to, Tony.
Well, yes, indeed. Well, McLaren Vale offers a lot more than just the wineries. I mean, it's a lovely village tourism, too.
I like that, you know. I mean, if you've probably people have been to the Barossa Valley, and that's been pretty much the theme of Barossa Valley for many years now, where you've got these recreated or traditional villages and you can go and you've got bric-a-brac shops.
It's only there about 7-8 months ago, and it was a terrific experience.
It really was. Yeah, and you'll see that McLaren Vale is following suit. They lagged a little bit there for a while, but they've really caught up now. Many of the wineries and the little village main streets have all brought themselves up to wonderful local produce, souvenirs, outdoor dining, weekend markets. Great deal of fun. Great deal of fun. I've got some ripper preserves.
I've got to say, one of the fun spots on the area is Port Lincoln. It really has transformed from that 60s, 70s era of the shark and tuna swimming and tuna farms. It's almost multi-millionaire row.
Well, it has, Tony. And I know as a kid I went over there with my parents and we hung around and it was a bit depressing. I mean, the tuna was sort of like, weren't much more than cat food in those days, in the 50s and 60s. And then, of course, some enlightened Japanese came down and said, oh, this is fantastic. Look at all these fish. And, of course, it just went parabolically up from there.
Yeah, well, there's that huge breakthrough too recently where it's for the first time been able to, it appears, breed bluefin tuna in captivity. And if that's commercially successful, that will be a huge breakthrough.
Well, they are experimenting with that. And we did get, this is something you'll see if you take one of the ships there. It was one of our shore excursions to actually go and see the pens where they, at the moment, they are, yes, experimenting with live breeding and captive breeding, but what they're doing is corralling wild ones. So they go out to sea with these huge big drift nets, corral up schools of tuna, drag them back and keep them alive for months and months.
It's got to be about sustainability, though, hasn't it? It's got to have a long-term process. And if they can breed in captivity, well, that's a huge breakthrough.
Yeah, and that's something they're working on. Because unfortunately the seals are very much attracted to these great big pens full of tuna, and keeping the seals away, you've got electric nets and all kinds of things.
Indeed. And of course, don't forget in Port Lincoln, the Makybe Devo little replica.
Yes, well, they're very proud and quite parochial about that. I'm sure you see plenty of Makybe T-shirts and paraphernalia there. But listen, Tony, I've got to tell you, one little experience that I had on the True North was as a shore excursion, what they call a shore excursion, was the shark swim. Now, you've seen the Rodney Fox type thing.
Well, I wasn't even there.
I was hoping. I've heard all kinds of stories. And, of course, a colleague of ours, Greg Granger, was telling me, oh, mate, I spent 2 weeks there and we didn't see a single shark. So I was going, oh, gee whiz, I don't know. But we turned up there on this particular island called Neptune Island. There was Rodney Fox's ship and there was our ship. And they converted fishing trawlers and sports cruisers. And they've got a big aluminium cage, which you've seen in the Jaws movies. In fact, they filmed some of the scenes from Jaws not far from there.
No, really?
So, you're out there, and guess who was waiting for us when we got there? The big boys were there. They were big, 4 metres, 5 metres.
I get nervous around reef sharks. That's enough for me.
If people have seen reef sharks, they're so timid, you've actually got to chase them to see them. But these guys don't need chasing, Tony, let me tell you. And they were there, and the guys on the ship were chumming great bucketfuls of minced gills and tuna guts into the water, and they were there, and they were hungry. So, and what they would, they work with the fisheries and they tag the ones as well. So they've got names for them. We've got Bruce and we've got Moose and we've got all these funny names for these sharks. So anyway, Tony, let me tell you, we put on the neck to ankle wetsuits because the water's a bit cool there. In we get, and you've got a like a surface feeding breathing apparatus, not a tank as such, but the same mouthpiece. In you get to the tank, two or three at a time. They drop the tank over the back, and you're sitting there hanging in the tank, and you can see the visibility is very good. It's hundreds of meters, and then you can see. And you can
high
see
drama.
This shadow come out of the murk and slowly morph into a full size. And I tell you what, that's a pretty exciting thing. And
God, you had your wetsuit on.
it was quite warm in there, Tony, I tell you. And they have these chunks of tuna hanging off the back of the boat attached to little floats. And they tease these poor animals, right? The things will come up, they'll start nuzzling these big chunks of tuna, and then they'll jerk it away at the last minute. They'll get cranky. And at one stage, this huge big one jumped out of the water, three quarters of the body length out of the water, took this chunk of tuna, it's mine, and splash, back in the water. And I tell you what, we just stood around for a couple of minutes, just mouth open, going, oh, holy moly.
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe. Don't yes, mess with
indeed.
Me.
Oh, that's extraordinary.
But that was the exciting part of it. And we're talking about exciting activities. So we've got wine tasting. We've got seal viewing. We've got and a little bit further down at Neptune Island, we also went ashore and we actually swam with the seals. So with some trepidation, I should point out, because that sharks hang around because seals are a good source of food.
Yes,
so White Point sharks.
Yes, afternoon snacks. Coffin Bay, you also went to.
Coffin Bay, well, that's well known.
Home of the oysters.
Home of the oysters. Now, the interesting thing is Coffin Bay oysters were cleaned out in the 50s and 60s. They were an ugly little oyster of not real much commercial value. So they scooped them all out and they're replacing them with the Tasmanian bred Pacific oysters. So these great big dinner plate oysters. And the wide, flat, shallow bays around Coffin Bay are ideal for breeding the oysters, and they are beautiful oyster, let me tell you.
They tell me that a fair bit of Gallipoli, the Williamson film, was shot there.
Just up the road.
Yeah.
Just up there. I was having this vigorous argument because I seem to remember that they filmed some of it on the Adelaide beaches down the famous nude beach at Maslin Beach down in Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to remember them doing some of the cliff scenes there. But no, I stood corrected. And a lot of the, most of the vast majority of the beach and sand dune stuff was filmed just outside of Coffin Bay, Dutton Beach, Farm Beach. And I believe you can go ashore and a lot of the trenches are still there. They dug them in and they're still there.
Fantastic. Apparently you can, it's good for fishing around the Coffin Bay area.
Well, it is. It is. Particularly whiting, good old King George whiting,
I love whiting.
Which, as far as whiting go, they're big one. I'm holding my hands out. Can you see that? It's about this far, Tony.
About that big. At least.
So we're looking at, so we're looking at 40 centimetres, 45 centimetres for a good one. That's worth a clink of the champagne glass. But, Tony, I've got to tell you, when we got a little bit further up the coast, on the western coast of the Eyre Peninsula, we stopped at this group of islands, which were discovered, like most of the landforms around the area, by Matthew Flinders,
mm-hmm.
Back at the beginning of the 19th century. And we stopped at a little group of islands called the Investigator Group, no prize for guessing how that was named.
Mm-hmm.
And we went ashore on this island, and there was no infrastructure of any sort. It was completely remote, completely uninhabited, a completely desolate island. And those remarkable rock forms that we see on Kangaroo Island, the whole island was like that. The whole island. And it was this stunning rock vista. Some of these big, upright, monolithic rock formations look for all worth like Easter Island, these great big moe from Easter Island. So we got out and we climbed around, and it was a real adventure experience. It wasn't hardcore by any means, but it was a good solid hike. And they have this black-footed rock wallaby endemic to this island, never seen anywhere else, and a couple of hundred left in the world. There probably only ever were a couple of hundred on this island. Great experience.
It's an adventure and a half. Well done. Golf cruising, returning to South Australia. And
good luck to them, Tony, I say.
It's a happening thing. Rod, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Tony.
Rod Imey. And if you would like to read a little more, Rod's website and blog is www.travography.com. www.travography.com. Unusual word, .com. Thanks, Rod.